T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Dan McNeil, Danny Parkins.
Oh, here we go!
Afternoons on the Score.
I have a level of excitement for The Last Dance on Sunday that is similar to approaching like a big sporting event.
You're excited. Feel these nipples.
This is something that has the potential, at least from all the teasing of it, to be substantive. It's the last important era in Bulls basketball, at least the last successful era in Bulls basketball, and it will take us to a time. All I want is to go back in time and remember what it was like to be on the road with that team.
Hey, Tone, you okay?
Yeah. Sure thing. You're being kind of quiet.
Well, that's because, remember when is the lowest form of conversation.
Before Michael Jordan got to the Bulls in 1984, drugs were prevalent. Cocaine and recreational drugs of all types.
Yeah, you got your lines over here, you got your weed smokers over here, you got your women over here.
My expectations honestly could not be higher, and I will be shocked if it doesn't live up to my high expectations.
Okay.
I dislike the founding fathers immensely. They're a weird group of guys. I hate when people are like, God has never created such a great group of men as the founding fathers. Yeah, the 92 Bulls. The 92 Bulls were better than the founding fathers. The 96 Bulls, maybe. That's actually a perfect metaphor for the United States. When I was a boy, the United States was like Michael Jordan in 1992. And now, the United States is like Michael Jordan now.
Yo! Saddle up! Lock and load!
The McNeil and Parkin Show, afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
It was like a live sporting event last night, and it certainly felt good. The Last Dance episodes 1 and 2 were a hit. We've been talking about them throughout much of today's show here on the McNeil and Parkin Show. We appreciate you hanging out with us as this is our 21st day of Scorentine, as we're calling it. And I'm very much looking forward to talking to our next guest. He had a front row seat for The Last Dance as he was a rookie on the Bulls during the 1997-98 season. Rusty LaRue with us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford is in Melrose Park. Rusty, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. That's quite a set of circumstances for a guy to have a rookie year. What was it like trying to absorb all of that as an NBA rookie?
Yeah. At the end of the year, we had a team meal, and I remember everybody had to go around the room and say something kind of after the championship, and I just thanked those guys for ruining the rest of my career because it was all downhill from there. It was quite the experience, obviously, especially as a kid who grew up in North Carolina. Being a Michael Jordan fan growing up and, just getting a chance to have a, courtside seat for that and to be a part of that team. And as a rookie, just getting a chance to really learn how to be a professional from those guys was an invaluable experience.
So, Rusty, you're fighting like hell to earn a roster spot. You're not drafted. Were you mindful at the time of how dysfunctional the organization had become and how much contempt guys had for management?
No, I mean, I did not. Obviously, I came out of Wake, averaging 10 points a game and trying to get on with anybody. I believe actually the year before I had agreed to come to camp with Chicago, because, you know, Clarence Gaines was a scout and had seen me play a lot in college with his dad being in Winston-Salem at Winston-Salem State, and left and went overseas and played overseas to make guaranteed money that first year, and then got invited back to camp that next year, but really had no idea. And really probably didn't really have much of an idea until kind of I got called back up during the regular season.
So were you there when Phil passed out the pamphlet that said The Last Dance on it that they showed in the documentary?
Yeah, I was. I was. So it was, you know, obviously being my first year with the team, I didn't get it until the year went on. Phil always had a lot of symbolism in what he did and, you know, spliced different stuff into videos and always kind of had a theme. And I guess as a rookie, you know, it was kind of lost on me. I was just fighting like hell to try to make the team and do everything I could to make myself valuable enough to keep me around for another day.
How weird was that, that there was so much turmoil going around you as you're just dipping your toes into the NBA water?
I guess at the time it didn't really seem that weird, just because, you know, it wasn't every day and all the time thing. Obviously, you know, that group of guys in particular – was such a professional group. I mean, it was they were older guys at the time, establishing their careers. And so I think it was just one of those things where I didn't know any better, I guess would be the right way to say it. And just said, hey, you know, this is kind of rule of thumb. You go to the league and this is the way it happens. You know, there's a lot of drama all the time. And I think it was a little, not overblown because it was there, but on a day-to-day basis, you know, those guys were professionals and they were coming in, getting their work done and doing what they needed to do to try to win games.
We're talking to Rusty LaRue. He was a rookie during 97-98. What did you think of the first two episodes of the documentary?
I thought they were good. You know, I was really interested to see what kind of slant they took. Obviously, it was pretty cool to hear the backstory of some of the guys. I knew most of that, but I think a lot of the average fan maybe didn't know kind of all of Michael's background and then also Scotty. So it was cool. I watched it with my wife and kids, and you know, they were excited. They weren't really born yet, so they didn't get to kind of feel the whole hoopla that went around it. So it was pretty cool to experience it with them, and then kind of all the hype around it coming out and getting to watch it.
How you know what? How much of a look did you get at some of the disdain that was expressed toward the general manager right to his face? They talked about last night, Phil noting that finally he had to say, "All right, Scotty, that's enough." How up close did you get to that, Rusty?
I mean, more than just on the bus. I mean, you heard Bill talk about it a little bit, and I think they mentioned it sometimes on the bus. There were some things, but I wasn't privy to a lot of it other than when we were as a group together occasionally, in particular on the bus, there would be, you know, shots fired and people, you know, expressing their opinions, and right or wrong, that's just the way it went. So
did any of it bother you?
Yeah, I was happy to get a paycheck. I was pretty thankful for the opportunity I got, and you know, Scotty had had a long career and earned the right to do what he wanted to do. And, you know, again, I kind of kept my mouth shut, kept my head down, and tried to make jump shots.
Yeah, I wouldn't think that you'd be the one to be like, you know, Scotty, it was kind of selfish to have that surgery when you did.
Yeah, no, if anything, it helped me get a chance to get called up and get an opportunity, because he was sitting out. So, you know, I guess to some degree I was not thankful, but opportunistic that I had the opportunity.
How present was Dennis Rodman in 97-98?
Dennis did his thing. I tell people all the time, you know, he's obviously a freak athlete, unbelievable motor, everybody talks about. But really, you know, he had a high basketball IQ, too. For a guy that everybody thought was just a rebounder, he really did understand the game. And especially with the triangle offense, the nuances of it, him picking up on those and knowing everything that was going on in terms of offensively, because he wasn't a stiff, you know what I mean? Even though he didn't score much, he still was a vital part on the offensive end too, just because he understood how to play and where to be and how to be in the right spots for rebounds. And he kind of came and went and did his thing. Obviously, there were times we held our breath that he would get into practice on time, but when he showed up, he worked his butt off and always spent a lot of extra time in the weight room and, you know, kind of did his thing.
Was there ever a time when, you know, I know you're saying like you didn't know any better, right? Because it's your rookie year and it's your first experience to the NBA. But was there ever a moment when you were like, this can't be normal, whether it was the attention of the Beatles or something that Rodman did or something with Michael Jordan and celebrity? Like, was there had to have been moments where you were like, I feel like I'm a part of something that's a little bit different.
Well, the first time we went over to Paris, you know, when I was on the team, with the team, we went to Paris, and that was a pretty crazy experience. Just, you know, the amount of attention the team got everywhere we went. And it was really like that everywhere. And I remember Judd Bushler just looking at me one day and saying, "Rusty, it is not like this anywhere else. You know, this is not reality." Because we would come into, you know, D.C. at 1:30 at night on a Wednesday night after we played a game, and there would be 200 people at the hotel, you know, waiting on the team. And it's just not normal. You know, like you said, it's just the Beatles. And probably after the Paris trip, I knew when I got cut at the end of this preseason and got called back up. And after my first game actually was on the road at Phoenix, and just the amount of attention we were getting on the road and those guys kind of making sure I understood it wasn't like this everywhere.
Yeah, Jordan was rocking the beret too. Did you get one of those when you were in Paris, Rusty?
I did not, but I got a pretty sweet leather McDonald's championship jacket I still got hanging up in the closet, so.
You know, I know you are coaching. You've been coaching for some time now. What did you take away from Phil Jackson that were some things to do once you became empowered as a head coach? And what did you learn from Phil not to do? I'm sure there are things on both sides.
Probably the biggest thing I learned, I don't know that I really learned anything not to do. You know, Phil's a little more laid back than I was as a coach. I was a little bit more animated, a little bit, vocal. But the one thing, Phil, everybody's always heard is he was such good at managing people, getting everybody on the same page, dealing with just all the drama, especially with that group, the periphery stuff that's going on, and, you know, not letting the circus really affect what was going on with the team. And I remember I got called up, you know, right in the middle of that little stretch right at the beginning of the season when they were struggling, and we were struggling. I got my second game or third game was at the Clippers when we lost that double overtime game. And there was one point in that game late in the game where I turned down a wide open shot just because, you know, I'm a rookie and it's a close game late in the game. And I remember Phil at one of the next timeouts, you know, he went through his whole spiel with the team, and as we're pulling out, he kind of grabbed me by the arm. He said, "Hey, if you're open like that, don't ever pass up that shot again. If you do, I'm going to take you out." And as a, you know, 24-year-old rookie, to have the guy tell you that gives you a lot of confidence and just, you know, makes you feel like, hey, he believes in you and you're there for a reason. And I think that's what he was great about doing, getting everybody to bring their strengths to the table and make the team better.
What motivational techniques did he have that you would say, man, that was something that only Phil Jackson would try to do as a coach?
Yoga before practice. You know, I don't know if you've heard, he used to splice video clips, random like movie clips into footage. I don't know if it was to keep us awake or what, but it was, you know, kind of stuff that, you know, you wouldn't think that at that level, that kind of stuff would be put in there, but he did it and made it work.
We're talking to Rusty LaRue here, McNeil and Parkins on The Score. You mentioned, you know, you from North Carolina being a Jordan fan. What was your relationship with Mike, if there was one at all?
I think Mike had a healthy respect for me. I mean, he was always really good to me. I don't know if it's because I'm a North Carolina guy or a multi-sport athlete, but he knew I was a competitor. You know, his tough love didn't bother me a bit. You know, I remember that, you know, one story is I was on the injured list. So when you're on the injured list, you don't get to travel. And I have four college buddies who were good. Come to New York, Jordan's last game in the Garden. I had asked to travel with the team, and the ticket guy was like, "Yeah, listen, you know." I said, "Look, I got to get tickets. I got four guys coming." He's like, "We'll take care of you." And we got there a week before the game. Week before the game, I called the ticket guy. I was like, "Hey, don't forget, I got my buddies coming." He's like, "Man, I got no tickets left." He's like, "Your only chance to get tickets are Michael, because he's got a ton of them." And of course, you know, I didn't really want to have to go ask Michael for tickets for my buddies, but they were coming and I had already committed, so I went and I said, "Hey, Mike, you know, I got four buddies coming. They're college buddies of mine. I promised them, and you know, I know you got a ton of tickets. If there's any chance I could get some. And he said, talk to me tonight when we get down to the arena. That night we had a home game. I went down and said, hey, you told me to remind you. He said, I got you taken care of. And I was still holding my breath, but, you know, game time came. And I get to the game. I look up. My buddies are sitting about 50-yard line, you know, 15 rows up, and they're like some of the best seats in the house. And I'm like, you know, he gave me some great seats. You know, for his last game in the Garden, didn't have to do it. I'm a rookie guy. But stuff like that, you know, I think sometimes people don't hear about. He was also a guy that I think really did, you know, if you went to battle with him, he cared for his teammates and would have your back.
That'll get the chest puffed out with the buddies. Yeah, yeah. Michael Jordan's got you guys center court, man. What do you think of that? I scored you up with the greatest.
I certainly didn't expect that, but that's again, the type of guy he was. And, you know, just a really good to me. Again, you know, I owe, obviously, my championship to him. And in my opinion, the greatest player to ever play. So I was excited to get to be a part of it and, you know, be a fly on the wall, at least part of the team for that short time.
Rusty, you said that the tough love in practice never bothered you. We didn't see a ton of it last night. I'm sure we'll see more, and we got a little bit of a glimpse of it. Can you paint a picture of, like, what that tough love was like towards you or anyone else?
I don't know that I got to see the full extent of it, just being on the tail end of that career, because I think a lot of the guys that were with him at that point had kind of probably been through the been through the furnace at that point with all the guys there, because they were all veteran guys, you know. But, you know, if it wasn't going like it was supposed to go, Mike, as you saw on the show last night, you know, when they talked about it, he wasn't afraid to let you know his opinion. And I don't ever remember necessarily one particular case where he jumped my grill, but I'm sure there probably were. And just in practice, I had heard stories. I probably didn't see any of them, but I remember, you know, Bill Winnington telling a story about one day in practice, he blocked Michael's shot and just kind of offhanded, he was like joking with him as Bill was a joker. Hey, get that out of here. And, you know, pissed Michael off so much that he didn't score on anybody else but Bill the rest of the practice, and he would make sure he only scored on Bill the rest of the practice and talk mercifully to him. So that's just who he was. You know, he was an ultra competitor.
So when you win the championship in 98, and you knew it was going to be broken up. That's the whole point of The Last Dance, that we've been talking about all day and will be for the next several weeks. But you don't know if you'll ever get there again. Did you have the mindset when you guys were all assembled in Grant Park for that championship rally, the sixth for Jordan and Pippen and Jackson, that, man, this is pretty good? I mean, that had to be an amazing thing for a young undrafted player.
It was amazing. I think when you're in the moment, you maybe don't realize it quite as much, especially being a young guy. And, you know, I had been successful at Wake and done a lot of things there. And I think now, as I look back and you look at all the players that had the opportunity and the great players that have played the game and never had a chance to win one, it probably would hit me more now. Not if I was probably later in my career, not to say it would have meant more, but I might have taken stock in things more, I guess, to say at the time. But, you know, I've been blessed in my career. I mean, I got a chance to play with some great players, Tim Duncan in college, and, of course, Michael and Scottie and those guys. And then I got to play with Stockton and Malone in Utah later in my career. So I've been blessed to play with some great people. And I was serious when I told them it was pretty much all downhill after a championship with the Bulls in 98 as a rookie. It's kind of hard to top that the rest of your go.
How much did Stockton and Malone hate Jordan?
I don't know that they hated him. They never really talked about it a lot, but they were competitive dudes too, and they were good at what they do. And you could just tell there was some, I don't know, healthy animosity maybe is the right way to put it. I think all the guys in every era, even this now. I mean, I know everybody poo-poos all the players now to say they're too buddy-buddy, but I think even back then, you know, those guys were friends with each other, but there was a healthy animosity, too, when it came to playing and wanting to beat each other.
Rusty, yeah, you fishing this afternoon?
No, actually, I am standing outside looking at my pond, and that's the ducks outside. I'm sorry you can hear them, but yeah. I'm on my headset. I'm sorry you hear them. But
oh, that's okay. It's very peaceful. Yeah, it sounds like I'd like to be with you hanging out on the deck having a cigar, having this chat. It sounds really nice.
Rusty, last thing from me. We've had BJ Armstrong on telling stories. Will Perdue recently telling stories of that team. And we're both a couple of gamblers on this show. And they would talk about Michael Jordan and how he would take money from his teammates and he'd have them set up to be the sucker in blackjack. Were you ever the sucker at a card game with Michael Jordan?
The one thing I will tell you is I am smart enough not to play cards with Michael Jordan. I don't have the paycheck nor the skills. So I did not bet with Michael Jordan and was smart enough not to. But, you know, my main job was to make sure that they had plenty of beer on the plane. As the rookie, my job was if they needed alcohol, I got it, and I had to get the bags from the plane to the bus and back and forth. And, you know, I was happy to do it because that's my initiation and that's what I did. But luckily, I did not lose any money, and I didn't have any lose. But I will tell you, the first time I went out to dinner with the team, we went out to eat, and there was, you know, 8 or 10 of us probably, Michael and some of the guys, and the meal came, and the bill lands on my plate, and I didn't flinch. I was just like, okay, if I got to pay for the meal, I got to pay for the meal. So I went to pay for it, and then they all stopped me about mid, and just, you know, were kind of like, ah, don't worry about it. We got it. And I don't think I paid for a meal the rest of the year. So,
nice.
But I was like, you know, I didn't flinch. I said, if I got to pick up the tab all year, then that's what I'll do. So,
hey, Rusty, man, we enjoyed it. I really appreciate the time, and I liked what you said on social media. You said you'd be in the documentary a lot, depending on how much footage of practice they showed. That was a very good line.
Yeah, absolutely. And my buddies had the good guys, actually, who the guys we call the good guys, the ones who came to New York, were texting me before. They said the over under was 1.5 appearances of me in the first two episodes, and they were betting on the I bet on the over, so I won because I told them I thought the back of my head would be in there at least 5 times in the huddle. So.
Not bad.
Get a good
hey, man, there are worse claims to fame.
No doubt.
Hey, you know, I kid, but, you know, it's. I tell people all the time, you know, sometimes it's being in the right place to work at the right time. And when the right time comes, you got to put in the work to keep the opportunity. And I was blessed to have it. And, you know, wouldn't trade it for the world. You know, I joke about it, but those guys were good to me. And it was a hell of an experience. And, you know, I had an 8-year professional career, and that was the start of it. And I look back now, and a lot of fond memories, and a lot of great people along the way, not just in Chicago, but along my journey. So
that's awesome. Last thing, Rusty, if the Bulls were flying from Chicago to L.A. and you were in charge of getting beers, who would take down the most beers on that flight?
That's a close one probably between Ron Harper and Mike. So. But that was the card crew: Scott Burrell, Ron Harper, Michael, probably Randy Brown in there. So they were they like to play cards.
Rusty, thank you very much for the time, man. Get back to those ponds and that pond and those ducks.
Thanks, Rusty.
All right, man. Sounds good. Have a
Take
good
care.
One.
Take care. You too. Fun talking.
That's Rusty LaRue.
Enjoy him.
Hell of a career.
Quite nice. Yes, right place, right time. You know, you're not drafted, and then all of a sudden you make a roster spot on this here NBA championship team that's won 5 and 7. And oh, by the way, you're going to get some playing time early because the very selfish Scottie Pippen decided not to have surgery in the offseason, so he's out. And it's baptism by fire. Dude's just trying to earn his NBA keep. And all of that stuff swirling around, I imagine it was probably easy for him to just keep his head down and try not to absorb all of that stuff. Otherwise, you just get lost in it, man. You're just trying to survive and doing what he was doing at that point.
Yeah, and it's such a good example of a guy who, like, just when they reach that level of skill at basketball, what you get exposed to and the stories you can tell, right? I mean, just in that. Oh, yeah, I played with Tim Duncan at Wake Forest, and then my rookie year was Jordan, Rodman, Pippen, and Phil Jackson's last championship in Chicago. Then I teamed up with Stockton and Malone. Like, that's just ridiculous you talk about a life spent in and around basketball. So very cool to catch up with Rusty LaRue here after the first two episodes of The Last Dance. Mac, there's a Bulls story that is circulating that I think is legitimately breaking news. I had never heard about this, and I want to know if you have. It is about those that second three-peat Bulls team, and it's coming from a source of none other than Tim Floyd. We'll bring it to you now.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Next on the score.
From a contract standpoint, wanted to be compensated like the other coaches that he had beaten. And Jerry wasn't going to do that.
In Jerry's mind, you move pieces in and out. You didn't move Michael Jordan pieces. Phil Jackson, yeah, you can move him in and out. And he was wrong about that.
That audio from The Last Dance, episodes 1 and 2 last night, basically setting up the crux of the issue being that 97-98 was known that it was going to be the last season because Phil Jackson could go 82-0 and win a championship, and Jerry Krause wasn't going to be bringing him back. That was known before the season started. Bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Athletics. The Wildcats would like to thank all of those working throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, including healthcare professionals. Thank you for helping to keep us safe. Bernstein covered that team. He's got a story at 670thescore.com right now and talked about it on the show about how it's more complicated than just Krause was the villain. Like, yes, Krause did not get along with Phil, and yes, Krause was looking to break it up, but he very well might have been right after 98 that Pippen needed back surgery and Rodman had broken down and Jordan had had his least efficient season, and that there was not going to be a title in 98-99, and so it should have been broken up.
Yeah, I suppose that argument can be made. I kind of favor letting the greatest of all time decide it on their own if that's what they want to do. I think in the case of Jordan and Pippen and Jackson, that trio had earned it. It's, you know, you watch the New England Patriots. They didn't want to part with Tom Brady last year, and they lost in the first round at home. They got punched out. So was that the wrong thing to do? To not punt before, you know, a guy's skills start to erode and he's not the same player? I don't know. I understand. It takes two to tango, or tangle, however you want to phrase that. I think you prefer tangle. And both actually make sense.
Both do make sense.
They do when you break it down. There were, you know, I think both sides exhibited petulant behavior from time to time, and it's too bad because they were both very, very good at what they did. Krause is a personnel man, and Jackson is a head coach, the most accomplished coach in NBA history when he was done, and that they couldn't work it out, that personality conflicts got in the way. This guy can go 82-0 and win it all, and he ain't coming back. Man, that's not good. You'd think cooler heads would prevail at some point. And Reinsdorf would just say to both of them, enough. To all of them, I should say. Enough.
Well,
already.
and that's what he did with Phil after the fifth title. And he just negotiated with Phil directly, like they showed last night, that he got the $6 million bucks, and they kind of cut Krause out of it. And that's why there was the animosity. And Phil Rosenthal, I referenced it earlier, he wrote, you know, something to the effect of, Jerry Krause deserved more credit than he got, but thought he deserved more credit than he actually did deserve, right?
I think that's spot on.
Yeah, he was kind of stuck in the middle, but this, so even if there's a basketball argument to be made and a cap argument to be made after they won the three-peat for the second time, 97-98, clearly, as they showed last night, it was talked about after they won the fifth title at the press conference with Jordan saying, we've earned the right to do it. But this is something that I did not know, and maybe other people were aware of it, but I was not at all. And this is Tim Floyd on 104.5 Sports Radio in Baton Rouge today, talking about how it wasn't just after The Last Dance that Jerry Krause had approached him to be the Bulls coach, but in fact they had had multiple conversations at multiple different points, including one, Mac, that I think is legitimately newsworthy.
We had a team that did not have great expectations that year, 1988. We were picked last in our conference and had a 6'4 center. And Jerry was scouting a guy by the name of Randy White from Louisiana Tech. He'd watched him play three times against us, all three games. And Randy was 6'9", 240, ended up being a lottery pick. They thought in Jerry's mind, he was going to be the next Karl Malone. And he was a good player. But anyhow, they had Brown at 6'9", and PJ Brown at 6'11", and Randy White at 6'9". And anyhow, we were small, and we beat them all three times. After the conference tournament, Jerry walked up to me and said, look, like I said earlier, you don't know me, but I want to let you know that you're going to be my next head coach. I basically take credit for their championships in 97 and 98 because Jerry and Phil, they were at each other's throats, and they didn't like each other, and Jerry Krause never felt like he got any credit. And so he wanted Phil gone, which would have been a disaster. And we had a former player at the University of New Orleans who was playing for the Seattle Supersonics named Irvin Johnson, 6'11".
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Jerry Krause wanted me to meet Jerry Reinsdorf for the first time. And he said, look, can you fly up here to the Seattle series and watch us play? Because I'd like for you to meet Jerry Reinsdorf. And he said, we can hide behind the fact that, you know, Irvin Johnson's playing for Seattle and we're playing in the finals. And you just, you know, wanted to see Irvin in the finals. And mm-hmm. I said, yeah, I'll meet Jerry. So they flew me up to Seattle. Jerry Reinsdorf and I walked around downtown Seattle. And the Bulls ended up winning that series. That was the first year Michael came back. And we're walking around downtown, and he basically said, look, Krause wants Phil gone this year. He thinks that Jerry Pippen's breaking down his back. He thinks that this team has run its course. He doesn't want to overpay these players as they're coming up on their contract years. He wants to move them before their contracts are up, 97, 98, where we can still get value for them and he can start to rebuild. And Jerry Reinsdorf, you know, was torn because they're winning. Mm-hmm. But Jerry Krause wanted it over and done with so that he could go back and basically take all the credit for the next rebuild.
That is certifiably insane. Like, that is one of the craziest things I've ever heard in my life.
Well, which part is crazy to you?
That is Tim Floyd saying that in Seattle, after they are coming off of a 72-win season, the most in NBA history, during the finals.
He wants him gone.
That Jerry Krause wants Phil Jackson gone, and that he did not even want to run it back for a shot at a fifth title, much less a sixth, because of how much he hated Phil Jackson. That is indefensible.
That's well, that tells you how deep it ran between Jackson and Krause, between the players and Krause. Jackson, who supported the players, and Krause, after taking crap for many years and being made fun of for things that he could control, like his very, very coarse personality. And also taking a lot of crap for things he couldn't control, like his physical appearance. Unfortunately, that was a big part of taking shots at the former Bulls general manager, including Jordan, including Pippen. Who knows if Phil Jackson even stooped to that level? But it was pretty well known when Floyd was presented as the Bulls head coach that he and Krause had a fishing history together, that they enjoyed fishing. And Tim was very, very aggressive at his introductory news conference and made it very clear he didn't want to be known as Krause's boy. It was a dramatic first news conference. Usually there's not much of an edge, and it's, I'm happy to be here, and yeah, this is my wife, these are my kids, you know, you tell stories and everybody's in a good mood. But Tim Floyd was edgy right out of the gate, because that was the perception, that he was Jerry's fishing buddy and he didn't want to be known as such. And I can't blame him for that, but that's exactly who he was at the time. He was a college coach who had started a friendship with Jerry Krause at the time, who was probably lonely and looking for people in basketball who would treat him well, because he didn't have it here.
You can make an argument that they would have extended their window of contention if they traded Pippen for McGrady at the end. You probably wouldn't have had a sixth title, but they 99, 2000, 2001, 2002 would not have been as ugly if you had Tracy McGrady, who went on to lead the league in scoring multiple times. But it is an indefensible basketball position to say after 95, 96 that they should have gotten rid of Phil Jackson and traded Scottie Pippen, and that you shouldn't pay Michael Jordan. That is an indefensible opinion.
Yeah, and it's the one that Reinsdorf, I mean, he didn't sign off on it at the time, but ultimately he did. It didn't take him long afterward where he said, okay, that's enough. It was just one more season, and he said, that's it. This will be the last go-around, so they ultimately get two more out of it. But he had the opportunity at any point, say, Jerry, deal with it. He's your head coach. And this is how you guys have to start finding a way to coexist. That he didn't insist on it is on him.
Talk about an all-time what-if, though.
Yeah.
Like, what if Jerry Reinsdorf listens to Jerry Krause and Tim Floyd is the coach of Michael Jordan and the Bulls for the 97 season, the first Utah championship, and Scottie Pippen isn't on the team? So no Scottie, no Phil, Tim Floyd, and a pissed off MJ. It's unfathomable.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
That is a wild story from Tim Floyd, 104.5.
Yes, Texter, I did say Jerry Krause had no control over his physical appearance. I wasn't referring to his weight. I was referring to his height and his face, because there were jokes made about the way he looked as well as him being heavy or being short. And they were cheap shots, and not saying I haven't done it from time to time, not necessarily with Jerry Krause, but hopefully, you know, grown-ups will realize that's not acceptable. When you're in, you know, grade school, it's one thing, but when you're an adult, when you're in a position of being a head coach of an NBA basketball team, come on, man.
We are broadcasting from the Score Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. It is the McNeil and Parkin Show. Have time for some more Doug Buffone audio to put a smile on your face before we're out of here on this, the fifth anniversary of his passing. It's next on the Score.
The Bears are who we thought they were. No damn good. They stunk. I mean, I'm just saying that. But let me tell you something. It's very difficult
if you really think about this, very difficult to score when your offense is on the bench. When your defense is out there giving up 70, 80, 70, 64-yard drives and taking up the time, you don't have the damn ball to do anything with it. And that's Lovie Smith's fault, too. He's calling those damn defenses. I'm not calling them. Ed's not calling them. He's calling them. And it's about time you start calling what the hell's going on out there. And this is not the first game. This happened in Detroit. This happened in Cincinnati. You tell me what's going on out there when that team can take a football and drive it down your damn throat. At least hold them to a field goal. This defense sucks.
A true original, a passionate Bears fan, former Bear, a score legend, Doug Buffone, passed away 5 years ago today. We've been remembering him all day on the station, and I'm sure that will continue after we're off the air, Mac.
I miss him so very much. I love Doug, professional level, personal level, but a couple of times today I've heard sound bites from Bears post-game shows, and I have an enormous amount of gratitude. He got to be 70. Wow, it's remarkable he didn't drop from a heart attack on one of those shows. He used to get so worked up. And I promise you, listeners, that is not manufactured. That is not a guy doing a bit. That is a guy furious because his football team, the Chicago Bears, had the audacity not to try to run the ball 25 times on a given Sunday afternoon, or they weren't red dogging enough when they weren't getting pressure from their front four. That's how he rolled, man.
And if people want some nostalgia and some great Doug memories, 4 o'clock on the podcast page or the radio.com feature, we had Ed Obradovich on, his old postgame show partner. And Mac asked him what he respected most or admired most about Doug Buffone. And we were 8-9 minutes into the conversation. We were talking about him on a personal level. And without missing a beat, OB goes that he always played hurt. It was just...
No, it was right after he gave his most emotional answer, I think, too. I was expecting him to really knock it out of the park, and then I got a football answer.
It was great. It was absolutely perfect. People
when we were in Rat Right, I always knew he was going
to
scrape off the tackle's right hip in perfect precision and keep his bad level down.
Held the edge.
That's what I admired most.
So good. It's just so perfect. But this is some audio that we wanted to play for you. It was after the Bears fired Mark Trestman. This is from Doug's last ever appearance on this radio station.
When it's all said and done with, I think it's time to burn the forest down. But here's the problem. Here is a damn problem. Will it happen again? You burn it down. You get rid of everything. Does it happen again? And this is where the fault is. The fault is with the Bear organization. The Bear organization is a loser. They hire losers. And they try to put gravy on bad meat to make it taste better. You know, this is not easy for me to say, guys, because I put 14 years in that with that team. But I remember in 14 years, I can't tell you how many times I sat down after a practice, after a game with Butkus, and we talked about what was wrong with the team. We never said, we never went public with it. The coaches were terrible. The players they brought in were terrible. But yet again, we kept thinking, oh, boy, next year. Well, I just feel like I got cheated. Butkus got cheated. Sears got cheated. Hell, they didn't even go to a playoffs. So what I'm saying to you is this, the fact that the organization is the problem of all this coming down. They go and they get bad players. They get Barber, Chester, Manu Maliuna, Sam Hurd, and this year Jared Allen, who couldn't play dead. They also get Mike Tice, and now it's down. I put Cutler on that list.
That'll do it.
It's a warning for the Bears fans.
Chester
Burn
Taylor
it all down.
Got first name only reference. I like that. They got Chester.
Burn down the forest.
He should have chosen to go first name with Brandon Manu Maliuna. That would have probably been a little bit easier, yeah.
I thought he did a good job.
That's Dougie. Yeah.
So we appreciate everyone sharing their memories on the text line today. Tanny with all of the great audio. I know Shep put in a few recommendations for what we played throughout the show today as well. Thank you to Herb Lawrence, who's been helping out through all of these Scorantine shows back in our Hyundai Score studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Rusty LaRue, Ed Obradovich, and Sam Smith were our guests on this fine radio program today. We have tomorrow, we have Hub Arkish, Jim Deshays, and Matt Spiegel all lined up to join us. Scorantine continues. Mac, this was 21. How many does it feel like it's been?
It feels like 21. Actually, 21. It feels more like 20 for me because I didn't work last Thursday. So 20, 21 days, yeah, and we'll keep rolling.
Yeah, you missed Scorantine 19 of COVID-19.
On May 19? No, it's April 19. I'll be there for May 19 just to sing the song, if nothing else.
Happy 420.
You too, kiddo. Get out on the balcony.
Make
short commute.
Mad.
It's not going to be a problem.
Mr. Lebowski.
Dude.
Huh?
I don't know, sir. You mind if I do it, Jay?
It's only a matter of time. Thank you to Chris Tannehill making us sound better than we are each and every day. Nick Shepkowski, the executive producer. For Dan McNeil, I'm Danny Parkins. We are McNeil and Parkins. This is The Score.
Thank you, Chicago, for your kindness, for your generosity, for your patience. Thank you for my life. Shine on, heal on, Maui Beach Boy on, David Axelrod, Sam Smith on. It's all of them. Here we go. It all rolls into one. Thanks for my life.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.